Morning, everybody. Welcome to Business Over Breakfast.
Good morning, everybody.
Welcome to Business Over Breakfast. My name is Shelley Heshen. I'm the manager of Incubation Entrepreneur Programs here at InnovaCorp. Very pleased to have Ross Simmons here this morning to talk about social media and show me the money. I'll do a little introduction of Ross, and then I'm going to pass the floor over. And is this interactive? Can they ask questions as they go?
Yeah, I like being interrupted. So,
Ross is a digital strategist and entrepreneur, and in the last 5 years of working in communication, he has been a strategist for CBC, a consultant, and then a digital strategist at Color. He's a consultant to many businesses looking to use digital marketing to achieve meaningful and measurable results. He does a lot of workshops around the city, and he has his blog, rosssimmons.com, and he's working on his startup Dreamer. So welcome. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Show me the money. It's a phrase that was coined in the 90s cult classic with Tom Cruise before he went crazy and jumped up and down on Oprah's couch. Show me the money. It's a phrase that a lot of businesses are asking and saying when it comes to social media, when it comes to digital marketing. Show me the money. And it's a statement that is consistently coming up. In the movie Jerry Maguire, Cuba Gooding Jr. is a quarterback. And he looks at Jerry, who's acting as his sports agent, and he says, show me the money. And Jerry has to go out, give 110% to show his client the money, to go out and get that business. All right, so these are four words that many businesses are asking when it comes to social media. They're asking when it comes to marketing. They're saying, where are the results? Where are the results? Why am I not seeing the results? And what I'm here to show you guys is how you can actually achieve meaningful, measurable results. Show me the money. Businesses are out there tweeting, they're Facebooking, they're blogging, and they're looking for that return. They're looking to see, why are we doing all of this? Why are we actually using Facebook? Why are we using Twitter? And it's sort of like going to the gym or trying to get in shape. It's like exercise, where at the end of the day, we all want results. We want to see results from the work that we're putting in. If we're going to be using Facebook, we want to see the results from it. If we're going to be using Twitter, we want to see the results from it. If you're going to be going to the gym for a week, you're going to want to see results. You don't want to take off your shirt and see that you're jiggling in a few extra places today. Saw that this morning. I have to go to the gym later. So these are the things that you think about when you're doing things with a goal. And that's really where it needs to start. It needs to start with a goal. When it comes to social media, when it comes to marketing, at the end of the day, I know this is marketing 101, but it starts with a goal. Figure out what it is you're looking to accomplish. Too many businesses jump into Facebook or they jump into Twitter, and they don't really think about why they're using these channels. They say, we're going to use Facebook, we're going to use Twitter, but they don't really know why. So before you do jump in, look at your business, look at what you're actually trying to accomplish, and then get out a pen and paper and write down what it is you're trying to achieve. If you're a new startup and you haven't really built your brand yet, your name isn't out there, then maybe you're going to want to focus on awareness. Maybe you want to get people to know who you are. That's your focus. So start there. Start with your goal of awareness. If you're a business that has been around for the past 10, 15 years, maybe you're looking at how you can serve your customers better, how you can increase your customer service. Start with the goal. Once you've identified that goal, start to identify what objectives you can establish for yourself. Okay, if I'm going to take on this Facebook thing, I can actually put out 5 status updates a month, or I can do 20 tweets a week, or whatever that may be. Identify some objectives that will allow you to accomplish that goal. That's where it all starts. I know for a lot of you, you know Marketing 101. Social media hasn't changed the way that marketing works. At the end of the day, you have to start with a goal. If you do not have the goal, you'll be on Facebook and you'll find yourself playing Farmville or something like that. You don't want to go down that road. You want to be on Facebook because you see what you're trying to accomplish, because you know what you're trying to achieve. One question that always comes up when I'm talking to businesses about social media is whether or not it's going to last. Whether or not social media is actually here to stay. Well, guys, it's not going anywhere. At the end of the day, social media has changed the way that that we interact with each other. It has changed the way that business is done. It's requiring businesses to be more transparent, to be more open, and to really, without question, have that engagement with their customers. My dad used to always talk to me about how back in his day when he would go to a barbershop, he didn't go to the barber who had the biggest ads or who had the biggest billboards or who had the most TV commercials. He went to the barber who he felt he had a relationship with. He went to the barber who he felt a connection with. And I think that's where social media is taking businesses again. It's taking us to a place where we're doing business with people we like. We're doing business with brands who are embracing us, who we're having conversations with, who we're interacting with, who are sharing our values. Those are the businesses that we want to do business with. So is social media a fad? No. It's not going anywhere. Social media has changed the way we interact. It has changed the way business is done. And I'm going to quickly just show you a few stats that support this. So first, 85% of internet users are on Facebook. 49% of internet users are on Twitter. So these facts on their own speak to the idea of, oh, so a lot of people think on Facebook it's just the young kids, it's the students, people are on there doing keg stands, all that stuff. No, you can't get away with that anymore. At the end of the day, if you are in business, more than likely, probably 85% chances, your target audience is on Facebook at the end of the day. Your target audience is on Facebook. There's no question that now. 49% of internet users are on Twitter. These numbers speak for themselves. This number is slowly increasing as more people start to look at Facebook and say, yeah, I'm not so sure about these privacy settings. Over the last quarter, this number went from about 35% to 49% because people are moving more and more to Twitter. People are embracing social media. Just to show you kind of the shift in the way people interact as a whole, this one blew my mind, and living with my girlfriend, I come to realize it's true. One in three women access Facebook first thing in the morning, before they brush their teeth, before they put on their lipstick, before they do anything. The first thing they do is they pull out their phone and they're checking Facebook because we're social beings. We are social by nature. We want to be connected. We want to see what our friends are doing, what our networks are doing. We're social beings. 42% of people mention brands on Facebook. 53% of people recommend brands on Twitter. People are out there talking about your businesses. They're talking about your brands. And at the end of the day, guys, this is something that you can't control. This is something that you can't control. And this scares people. People are like, I can't control this message. I don't want to be there. Well, what my hope is to show you today, not how you can control the message, but how you can influence it. How you can influence the message to be aligned with the story that you want to tell. 3.5 billion pieces of content shared each week on Facebook. 3.5 billion. This is more content that would have been created in a year back in the early 1900s. This is where we live today. We live in a world where content is being shared on a regular basis. And what I hope to also show you is what type of content you can create to really cut through the noise. Because when you look at this 3.5 billion, probably about 2.5 billion is cats. So you have to figure out how you can cut through, how your message can be differentiated from all the cats and all the bacon pictures. So how do you cut through the noise? You cut through the noise using two things. You can cut through the noise using unique brand storytelling and content excellence. I'm going to quickly dive into these things just briefly. But what unique brand storytelling is, it's the ability to deliver a message to your audience through your voice of your brand, through your tone, in a unique, compelling way. In a way that differentiates you from your competitors, and in a way that your target audience will look at and say, that's a story that's worth sharing. So over time, when you look at brands like Coca-Cola, when you look at brands like Apple, when you look at them, you realize that these brands have a story. They have a story, whether it's happiness or whether it's think different, there's a story behind these brands. Avis, Car Rental, they do a great job with their brand storytelling. They looked at their competitor, Enterprise, and they said, what can we do to differentiate ourselves? So instead of simply saying, we're number one, or we're the best, or come with us, they said, Avis is only number two, but we don't want your sympathy. Because we're number two, we try harder. So that was their story. Their story is, we're number two, but that makes us try harder, because we're constantly trying to become number one. That's their story. That's the story that they're telling. Another example of a great story is this company called MailChimp. MailChimp is an email provider, and their story is all about being that light B2B company. So they're in the B2B industry. They're trying to target businesses who want to send out emails to a large group of people, and all of their content is filled with this light, fun, hip thing. They have this monkey, and it's called Freddy. And Freddy is this clever, snarky kind of guy who's always sending out funny little tweets and doing things like this. So when you come to their website, it says, "Why am I smiling, you ask?" Because I'm not wearing any pants. So it's light. This is something that's new to kind of that B2B place where you're always wearing your tie. And if you wanted to get rid of all of this funniness and all of this crazy personality, you can go to party pooper mode and you can turn it off. So that's the story that they're trying to tell. They're telling the story of their brand as being light, as being humorous, as being fun. On the back of their annual report, they had the back of the monkey, and it said a look back, kind of showing what they had accomplished over the course of the year. That's their brand story. That's the story that they're telling. So think about what story your business can tell. What is that story? What is it that allows you to differentiate yourself from the competitors? Find that story and then think about how you can use that to cut through the noise. So, content excellence. What is content excellence? Content excellence is a phrase that was coined by Coca-Cola, and it's essentially this: the delivery and development of consistent, sustainable, and compelling content. So what does that mean? It means for 365 days a year, whenever you're putting out a tweet, whenever you're putting out a blog post, whenever you're sharing something on LinkedIn, think about how compelling and how unique that piece of content is. Do people actually want to hear it? Is that interesting? And to achieve content excellence, you really just have to start creating content. Everything that you do online, when you're sending out a tweet, when you're updating Facebook, when you're sharing an Instagram photo, that's content. If I could make one recommendation to a business, my recommendation is always to start with a blog. And the reason why I recommend starting with a blog is because of Google. I mean, if I go to Google search, there's nothing indexed more than a blog. Websites that blog generate more traffic than those that don't. And I always get a little bit of hesitation when I talk about blogging, and it seems like there's a love-hate relationship as it comes to blogging amongst a lot of business owners. And the reason is because it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time to come up with those blog ideas. It takes a lot of time to actually write those blog posts. I'm going to make a little Dr. Seuss quote really quick. "I'm afraid that sometimes you'll play lonely games too. Games you can't win because you'll play against you." That's how blogging is. The only competition in blogging is yourself. You have to make that personal commitment.
You talked just a little bit about how a blog differs from a column. Like a lot of people have difficulty, I guess, understanding the difference.
Right.
I have a lot of difficulty explaining the difference.
For sure. Yeah, definitely. So the difference really isn't in the technology, it's in the approach. So with a blog, you are consistently able to share pretty much anything you want. You can talk about corporate culture, you can talk about yourself, you can talk about things in your industry. With a column, you kind of establish, this is all I'm talking about, so this is my niche. And you focus solely on that. With a blog, it allows you that flexibility where you can link back to other websites. A blog's intention is not really to solely build traffic. It's to really build that story. With a column, your main focus is, this is the message I want out there. So it's not as engaging, so to speak. With a blog, you have that commenting section, and I'll talk through the process of blogging a little bit further. But with a column, it's essentially that one-time blowout. It's there, and you consistently just share it out through that column. With a blog, you share your content, and then you have those conversations taking place below it. So bloggers need to kind of realize that you really are up against yourself. When it comes to creating that content, the biggest challenge is to, one, be inspired, and two, figure out what it is you want to talk about. The reason why I recommend blogs is for these two stats on their self. Companies that blog get 55% more web traffic than those that don't. They also get 70% more leads. So if you're blogging, if you're creating content on a regular basis through your blog, you have a competitive advantage. You're going to have an increased chance to generate traffic than your competitors. You're going to have more eyeballs on your site, which gives you an opportunity to convert them. So how does blogging work? What's that process look like? Well, with blogging, it essentially starts by creating content. And when I talk about creating content, I'm talking about two different types. There's compelling content, and there's remarkable content. So compelling content is easy to create. All of you can create compelling content today. Compelling content is when you think about your target audience, figure out something that they would be searching for on Google, and then providing them with an answer. So if you are a marketing company, and I'm looking for 5 easy marketing tips, that's something I would go to Google and search. You should write that blog post. If you are a technology company, and you write a blog post called What Everybody Ought to Know About X Technology, that's the blog post that you should be putting out there. That's a compelling blog post. Now, what's challenging is creating a remarkable blog post. And a remarkable blog post, I just need you to focus on the syllables for a second. Remarkable. Focus on the first two. Remark. It's content worth making a remark about. If you can create content that's worth making a remark about, people will start to have this thing called a conversation. They'll go to Twitter, they'll talk about your blog content, they'll be on your actual blog, having comments on your blog. They'll have these ongoing conversations. And when the magic happens, you don't even actually have to be involved. You simply put up the blog and conversations start happening on your site. And as that develops, you start to build a community. And when you've established a community on your blog, on your website, where people are talking about your content, sharing your content, they start to look at you as an expert. They start to look at you as somebody who knows this industry, knows this field better than anybody else. And that's when you have a chance to kind of differentiate yourself. So what type of content should you create? I like this concept called the 3 E's. And the 3 E's is broken down into educate, engage, and entertain. So what does that mean? First, when it comes to educate, you want to educate people on what you do. So this is talking about your value proposition, putting that out there in front of people. Talking about your actual product, your service, whether you're having an event or whether you're hosting something. Create content that educates people on the things that you're doing out there in the industry. Second, you want to engage people. So you want to have those blog posts where at the end you simply ask a question, where you ask people to provide feedback on something, where you ask people to send out tweets if they think of something, anything like that. Try to engage with your audience. And then third, entertain. So this is an interesting blog out of San Fran called Samovar's Tea. And basically what they do is they create these videos called tea porn. And what tea porn is, it's weird, I know. They basically take the leaves, they sprinkle them on a table, they unravel them, they videotape it, people look at them, they talk about how it smells, and they get like 600, 700 views on these videos every single time. People are crazy. but they're constantly watching these things, but they recognize their audience. Their audience is tea connoisseurs, people that are actually going to sit there and watch 10 minutes of somebody looking at tea leaves. That's their target audience, so they're entertaining them. So think about your audience. Think about what you can do to provide that kind of entertainment. What are they interested in? So what should you blog about? I'm going to go back to Dr. Seuss on this one. Today you are you that is truer than true. There is no one alive that is youer than you. Blog about your brand. Blog about your industry. Blog about the things that you know. All of you have your own expertise. Put those ideas out there. Put the concepts that you know. Put the experience that you know. The tips and tricks of the industry. Put that content out there. A few examples. So create content that your customers are interested in. This is a website, it's a dating site called How About We. They have an amazing blog. The majority of their traffic, the majority of their leads come directly from their blog. So they create content like 9 reasons why dating is better as a single mom. They create content that their customers would be interested in. They're going after people who are single. So they're creating content that is all about that. Women are apparently most seductive at the age of dot, dot, dot. It's content that's engaging, that's relevant to their customers. So when they put this content out there, people are going to be more likely to look at it. They're going to read it, they're going to share it, and it's ultimately going to drive their ranking up in Google. So people are going to be more likely to find their content. You want to also create industry-relevant content. So HubSpot is a marketing company that provides an all-in-one enterprise suite. They create a blog post called The 10 Commandments of Do-It-Yourself Marketing Design. Again, content that their audience would be interested in. It's content that, sure, for many years, a lot of people tried to keep this stuff behind closed doors. We can't put all our ideas out there. The competitors will see it. Well, if you don't and the competitor does, they have a chance to start taking what you could have had as customers. So they're putting it all out there. They're putting their ideas out there, their tips and tricks, their secrets, and they're generating results because of it. And the way that you generate results is by having call to action. This is where the money is. If I was to say, why would you blog? It's because you are able to generate leads. You can start to get the emails to come into a database where you can follow up with them. This is a blog for a company called Kissmetrics. Again, there you target CMOs, they target VP of marketing, they target the marketing people. Basically, when you come to their blog, they have all of this content, but they also have videos that are trying to sell their product. They have an email list where they're trying to get you to subscribe. Once they get your email, they'll follow up with you. They have a webinar, again, where they're trying to convert you. All of these different call to actions allow them to grab your information and then follow up with you. And then when they follow up with you, if their sales team is good enough, they'll be able to convert you into a customer. So they use their content as kind of a bait and switch. We'll provide you with this great content, but we want your contact information in exchange. So sure, you're reading our posts. Why don't you sign up to our newsletter to get it every time we publish? That's great. That's why a consumer would give their email, not knowing that over time, that email is going to be taken down the sales funnel where they'll be tried to be converted. Another example of the potential with a blog, if you type in landing pages, tips, this website comes up because they've done such a great job with their blogging. It's called Unbounce. But look at all the call to actions for how they can try to get the money, where they're trying to get people to sign up, where they're trying to get people to give me your contact information so I can follow up with you. At the top, they have a bar and it says, see what's new. You click that and it takes you to a sales page. You click sign up for free. Again, big orange button trying to get people. Contact us. The phone number's right there. Start your free 30-day trial. Enter your email to subscribe to our blog. Everywhere you look, they're trying to get you to convert. And that's the power of blogging.
A couple questions. So the company does a blog.
Yep.
Should it be one person or should it be everybody doing it at various times?
If you have an organization where multiple people can blog, I'd recommend multiple people blog. And that way, it's not as overbearing for one person. If you try to jump into blogging and it's just one person and they're wanting to do it, but they're not all the way into it, it's kind of like trying to drink out of a fire hydrant. It's just overwhelming and they're going to give up. So what you want to do is you want to have a group of people who can commit to it and then create that content over the course of the year.
How do you determine the edge or the balance, the boundary between creating content that's educational, engaging, and entertaining?
Yeah.
And hitting something like this, if, you know, if I see this, I'm like, okay, they're trying to sell me 18 things here.
Right. Yeah.
How do you make those judgments?
It's tough. It's a challenge for a lot of businesses. I do think that they go overboard maybe. I would have to look at their metrics to see if it's working for them, but they do have a lot. If you look at the last one, they only had it on that left-hand side, so it's not that many. I think that you can probably achieve success with 3 call to actions on your blog. That's really the best place of all places to put your call to action is at the end of your blog post. So after somebody reads it, they come down to the bottom and it says, did you enjoy this blog post? Please place your email in this form and we'll follow up with you. That's one that I recommend to anybody, to have it at the bottom of your post itself.
Another question.
Yes.
Where on your website do you put the blog?
It's basically on your website you would have your static site and then in your top navigation you would have a second button that just says blog and it would take people to another section of your website. So it would be kind of the secondary site, so to speak. So Again, another interesting blog post. This one's from OkCupid, which is known for putting out remarkable content. They constantly put out these blog posts that are like thesis papers. They're huge. They're probably about 5,000 words each. But they've created blog posts that always generate buzz, that always generate media, and that people are constantly sharing. They create things like the big lies people tell in online dating, or gay sex versus straight sex, the case for an older woman. They are a dating site. So they put out things that their audience would be interested in, but they also put out content that the media is going to talk about. So try to think about what content you can put out there that's actually worth talking about and worth sharing. When you create these blog posts, you also want to be visual. You want to kind of include photos, include video, put as much rich content into these blog posts as possible. The worst thing that you can do is go to a blog post. I remember one of my first blog posts, it still hurts me. I wrote probably about 3,000 words. I had no photos. It was a thesis paper, pretty much. I was fresh out of school, so it was just like a paper. And nobody read it. This was the best blog post I thought that could be written. It was insightful. It was crazy. But nobody read it. Nobody read it because it wasn't compelling. There wasn't photos. It wasn't formatted properly. So you want to ensure that your blog posts have visuals, that they're rich, that they have headers. You want to make it easy to digest. You want to make your content easy to read so it can be easily shared as well. When it comes to content, another easy, great way to kind of get your message out there is infographics. So if you're familiar with infographics, they're basically when you take a lot of data or interesting stats and figures and you add them to a visual diagram. So you have things that are showing people and the percentages are made up on their visual look. You have to kind of think more of the design world to kind of create them, but infographics are a great way to kind of get a message across. People are visual. If a picture can speak 1,000 words, that's why infographics are kind of generating so much buzz. So infographics are something that I strongly recommend people to check out or at least consider when you're thinking about your business. But this isn't the only type of content that you can create. You don't have to solely create blogs and say this is the end-all be-all. You can also create things like ebooks. So an ebook is where you basically just sit down, you write 30, 15 pages about your industry, and then you simply say, I'm published this book, you put it into a PDF, you put it on your website, and then people will give you their email to actually download it. So once they give you their information, again, that's a potential lead. That's somebody who you can follow up with, you can connect with, and you can close the sale with later on. There's also this interesting approach where it says, get it for a tweet. So if I tweet about your book, if I tweet about your business, you're going to give me this ebook for free. So sure, maybe this person isn't somebody who is going to be a customer, but by them paying for a tweet and them sending this out, all of their friends will see that. All of their connections will see it, and you have the chance to convert their friends.
Do you mind sharing the slides with us?
Not at all. Yeah, I can send this one. For sure. Definitely.
What is the difference between ebooks and why?
Your audience. Really, when it comes down to it. It's more of a marketing spin than anything, in my opinion. And yeah, it depends on who you're trying to connect with. If I'm going after CEOs and the C-suite, I'm going to publish a bunch of white papers. If I'm targeting VPs of marketing, if I'm targeting consumers or startups, I'm going to publish an ebook. So at the end of the day, they're both just content in a book form. How you frame it up really depends on yourself. One thing that I do notice is that with white papers, there's a lot more data in them. So a lot of insights from data, and there's a lot of data being found in white books, in white papers versus an ebook itself. Another interesting piece of content, webinars. You create a webinar, people come out, they sign up, you do a blog post to announce it, they give you your contact information. People tweet about it, people sign up. Once they sign up, they are a soft lead. There's somebody who you can follow up with later on. These guys email you just to let you know that the spots are filling up quickly for this webinar, so you need to tell your friends to sign up. That's the power of creating content. If you can do that, you'll be able to develop that kind of consistent stream of leads. Once you've developed all this content, you have to figure out where it's going to go. I mean, this is the next step. This next step is really to think about, okay, so we're developing blog posts, we've created an ebook. Where does this content go? Where does it live? How do I market it? How do I get the word out about my blog post? How do I get the word out about this webinar that I'm hosting? Any of you guys familiar with the Power Rangers or the Simpsons? So these are two shows that I grew up with, the Simpsons and the Power Rangers. And every time I would go to school, all my friends would be talking about the Simpsons, talking about the Power Rangers and how awesome it was. And I had to pretend that I knew what they were talking about because I wasn't allowed to watch the Power Rangers. Too much violence. So I would go to school, I'd pretend that I knew what they were talking about. I knew what weapons they had because I saw them in Toys R Us. I'd pretend I saw the shows and they'd be like, oh, Ross is cool, he knows what we're talking about. So I was in the in crowd by pretending I knew about the Power Rangers. When it comes to social media, a lot of people are pretending. A lot of people are pretending that they know what they're doing, that they know what they're talking about, that they know how to use Facebook, that they know how to use Twitter. A lot of people are pretending. So what I want to talk about today are two of the most popular channels, what I like to call the Revenue Rangers. So I'm going to be talking about Facebook and Twitter. And Facebook and Twitter are without question the two channels that have changed business bigger than any. Yes?
Just a quick question. How would you categorize LinkedIn? You mentioned a couple of
them. Mm-hmm. LinkedIn is the Facebook for professionals. So you go on LinkedIn, you are able to build those true professional relationships. You can recommend people. It's great for B2B. It's awesome for B2B if you want to build those relationships one-on-one with an individual. It's also great for just developing your brand and connecting with people. The best part, that the one thing that really clicked for me about LinkedIn and the power of LinkedIn was back when I was in university. I signed up for LinkedIn. Not a lot of people were on it. I went to a networking event. I met a couple professionals. I was still in school. Shook their hand. Added them to LinkedIn. Because I had added them to LinkedIn, 2 months later, an event came up. I saw one of them update their status saying they were heading down to this event. I immediately knew that somebody going to this event was somebody I had a relationship with, somebody who I already knew. If I would have saw him, I might not have recognized his face, but because I connected on LinkedIn, that person stayed top of mind, and so did my name. So they knew who I was. LinkedIn is great for that personal, professional relationship building. But that's something that, and the great part about it is you don't have to scan through a bunch of pictures of cats and coffee pictures and stuff like that. You don't have to see that. On LinkedIn, it's solely business, which is great.
Sorry, is it developing, though, as a place to share content?
It is. Don't share cats, but it is developing as a place to share content. Exactly. If you're creating that content we talked about, you want to share it on your LinkedIn profile. You want to put that content out there for sure, without question.
Ross, what would you place that
Google Plus? Google Plus is, in my opinion, it's like... it's developing, but it's not developing in a way that it should. It's developing because Google is forcing it to develop. So if you sign up for Gmail, you have Google Plus. So when you look at the metrics around how many people are actually using Google Plus, they're not always accurate. The power of Google Plus, in my opinion, is for search. If you can add Google Plus plugins on your website, that is huge. Because if one person presses that, you're going through the roof when it comes to search engine optimization. There's also this thing called authorship, which allows you to put your face beside any of your content on Google Plus. So if I write a blog post and you do a search and my content shows up, you're going to see my smiling face beside that blog post right in search. So yeah.
To me, Google Plus seems like a social media solution to the problem.
Right.
They're trying to come up with differentiators.
Yeah.
From the more popular social media solutions. But it's not clear that those differentiators
are important. Exactly. It's true. That's spot on. I mean, they created this thing called circles, which they thought would be their differentiator and kind of separate them from the bunch. And with circles, what it allows you to do is to put people into groups and then share content specific to them and then create another group and share content specific to them. It was their way of saying, with Facebook, there's privacy issues and you only want your colleagues to see certain photos of you. So you use Google Plus to make sure that only people are only seeing the content you want them to see. Facebook saw that, and they created this thing called groups. So now you can do it as well, but just on Facebook. So as long as Facebook has 850 million people signed up, Google Plus has a long ways to go, because Facebook can just iterate and just change on the nick of the dot. So when it comes to Facebook and you're building your brand and you're building a page, the first thing that you need to do is build a following. A lot of people get caught up in trying to get a few likes, and they have 30 likes on Facebook. They're sharing their content. They're getting some likes on the content they're sharing, but the only people liking it is their mom. You don't want that. You want to reach people that you're actually trying to connect with. You want to reach that target audience. You want to reach the people who you can actually convert into customers. So how can you do that? Use this thing called Ad Manager. One thing that I have to recommend is if you have a Facebook page set up, if you're on Facebook and you have a Facebook page, when you do a status update, it will say, do you want to promote this post? Right underneath it. Don't press that. Because if you press that and Facebook says, okay, it's only going to cost you $5 to promote this post, that post is being promoted to everyone. There's no targeting. So it's going to be seen in Kazakhstan, it's going to be seen in India, it's going to be seen in Japan, all over the world. But the audience that's seeing it is irrelevant to you. So you're going to get a few likes, people are going to like it, and you're also going to see some things being commented that make absolutely no sense. And the reason is because Facebook just wants that money. They want that quick return. When you use Ad Manager, you're able to be very targeted in who you put your ads in front of. So if you wanted to target somebody who is 45, single, from Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, you could do it with Facebook ads. A quick thing that allows you to kind of see how targeted it is, when you go home, just change your relationship status to engaged and see how the ads change. It's crazy. I mean, you start to see things for like honeymoons. You start to see, are you planning a baby soon? All these crazy things. If you change your age to like 60 and you're a guy, you start to see all these Viagra ads. So there's a bunch of different things that you get to see when you play with your settings. People will ask you if you're crazy and what's going on with your profile, but it's fun. So yeah, do that and you can see how targeted you can really get with your Facebook ads.
So, in the promoted post, can you not put criteria in there at all?
Not directly, not if you're doing it from the front of your page. If you do Ad Manager, so you go to facebook.com/ads and you create a promoted post, you can target it.
So that's the only place you can put criteria?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the new word of both is Facebook. I mean, Facebook allows you to have your story shared on a rapid basis. So one easy approach and why I always recommend Facebook ads is for stats like this. If you look at Facebook ads, they always tend to have a name below the ad. They do that because people like things that their friends like. So they'll show you the name of your friend below an ad, so you are more likely to press that like button. They'll say, Rossum has just liked this photo, or Rossum has just commented on this post. And they'll share that content with you as an ad. And they do this because of social influence, because they recognize that there's a 400% lift in purchase intent if I see that my friend has purchased something. So if I see that my friend supported it, I'm more likely to like it as well. One new opportunity that exists with Facebook ads is this thing called cookies. So if you are on Facebook, you're on there browsing, you're looking through your news feed, you leave, and then you come back. Say, for example, you left and you went to a Ford website. So you're on Ford, you're looking for a new truck, you're scrolling through the pages, you see a truck that you like, but you're not actually going to buy it. You go back to Facebook and you'll see this ad. You'll see this ad. This ad will follow you from that website to Facebook. The way that it does that is it will cookie you. So it adds this little pixel to your browser, and then you're able to kind of track where people are going. So from a consumer perspective, you're like, that's creepy. But from a business perspective, you're like, that's awesome. That's an easy way for you to convert. Somebody who was looking through your product, didn't actually buy, then they leave to spend a bunch of time on Facebook, and you can put your ad in front of them. So it's called tracking. If you go into that ad manager, you scroll down to the bottom, you can find it there. So why do people like brands on Facebook? Here are the top reasons. So the first, to receive discounts and promotions. Number two, to show support of the business. Three, stay informed about a brand. Four, freebie or sample. And then five, sales or discounts. Now you look at that and you're immediately thinking, wow, people just want free stuff. And sure, free stuff is great. Don't get me wrong. Everybody likes free stuff. But look at number two and number three. To show support of the business or stay informed about a brand. They like you because they really like you. That's why they're liking you. So if you can create that story, if you have a goal in mind around awareness or engagement, and you can tell that story through your Facebook page, through the updates that you're putting out there, you'll be able to do this thing called activate them. You'll be able to get them to share your story for you. You kind of develop the sense of a little military on Facebook where they're out coming up to bat for you if somebody comes on your page and they're arguing with you, where these people will start to share your story for you. Activate your fans instead of just collecting them. Too many people are constantly getting caught up in how many likes they have on Facebook. It's better to have 500 likes with 500 people listening than 10,000 likes and 10 people listening. So activate your fans. Develop a group of people who are actually willing to share your story. Recently, Facebook bought Instagram. They bought Instagram because they see the power of visuals. They see the power of constantly sharing a message through images. If you go on Facebook in the next week or so, you're going to see some changes in your newsfeed. The reason why is because Facebook is putting more emphasis on photos. They're changing it to make your photos show up bigger in your newsfeed. And that's something that's just taking over when it comes to Facebook itself. So what type of content can you share that will allow you to kind of stand out from the competitors? There's this content that I like to call reactive storytelling. And reactive storytelling is when you take a top-of-mind idea, top-of-mind concept, and you combine it with a marketing message. So what does that mean? So during the Super Bowl, if you watch the Super Bowl, you'll remember at halftime when all the lights went out. So they had to cancel the game for a little while. They had to put it on pause because all the lights went out. I think Beyonce had a little bit too much jelly for the Superdome. But either way, Oreo sent out this tweet. They said, "Power out, no problem. You can still dunk in the dark." They sent this out. It got picked up by media. It was retweeted 15,000 times. It was shared 25,000 times on Facebook. They were able to reach more people with this one status update than they would have if they would have actually invested millions of dollars into a Super Bowl ad. They were getting press. They were generating tons of conversation. People were talking about them. It went insane because they took something that was happening in real time that people were talking about, that people were interested in, and they combined it with a marketing message. Another one here is from Skittles. When they landed on Mars, they sent out this status update. "Send your rainbow rover right over." And then they show a red Skittle to represent Mars. Simple as that. That was able to generate 5,000 likes, 2,000 shares. Another interesting approach, meme-related content. If you're familiar with memes, creating content like this generates tons and tons of awareness. The Big Green Giant put up this status update on Facebook and it went crazy viral. They were picked up in media and it simply says, "Hey, I just cooked you and you were tasty and nicely seasoned, so see me maybe." I can sing. I know. So they use this status update and it goes crazy because they're playing off of that Carly Rae Jepsen song. Something that's top of mind. Everybody knows the song. Everybody's talking about it and it just went crazy viral. It's similar to that Harlem Shake video. You guys see that lately? Where people just start dancing like crazy. Brands are starting to capitalize on things that are happening in real time. Things that people are interested in. When Michael Phelps won the gold medal and went crazy. I can't even look at this photo without laughing. Nutella put up this status update. It said, "Mom brought Nutella." And it shows Michael Phelps freaking out. Again, it just went crazy viral.
So what does the meme mean?
A meme is basically anything that's in pop culture that people find interesting and funny. It's like a joke. It's an internet joke, so to speak. So things that people are laughing about and sharing online.
Where does meme come from? Is it like e-memo kind of thing or what?
I have no idea where it comes from. And people get after me saying it's a meme instead of a meme, and I don't know. Do you know, Greg?
I don't know where it comes from, but it's definitely
me. Okay, that's what I thought. So one other thing that you need to consider when you're on Facebook is speaking to people directly. This is a trick that I use and I love. So it's the ability to target the people who actually see a status update when you put out it. So if you were to do a status update on Facebook, you're able to actually target people now directly on their attributes that they've provided on Facebook. So for example, if you wanted to target people who are women, you can go in here, you can share a blog post, and it can be solely focused on a woman's product, and only the women will see it. So none of the guys who have liked your page will see this post show up in your newsfeed. If you want to target people who are a certain age, and you want to say, "Baby boomers rock," and you only target baby boomers, you'll get so many likes on that post, and it's awesome. One easy thing that I found is pretty cool, you can also target location. So what I've done is one time I targeted people in Toronto, and I targeted people in Montreal. I said to the people in Montreal, go Habs go, said to the people in Toronto, go Leafs go. They didn't see each other's posts, and they were all going crazy thinking that the brand loved their team. No, it loved everybody's team. So by doing that...
On yours, what shows up? Do either of them show up in
your... You'll see it, but the consumer will only see whichever one you want in front of them. So the people from Montreal have never seen that Toronto Maple Leafs status update. The people from Toronto would have never seen the Montreal status update. So it allows you to be very specific in who you want to see things. It's also great if you're targeting people in French that speak French or Mandarin or something like that. You can target them based off of their language, so it becomes more specific to them.
Can you put together, can I speak to
French
women
of... You can, yeah. So you can get as niche as you can want, yeah. So there's a few things that you should also know about Facebook, specifically that you're only reaching 20% of your fans when you do a status update. This is something that Facebook has implemented recently, and it's something that a lot of businesses are struggling with. It's this thing called EdgeRank. And what EdgeRank is, it's this weird algorithm that determines what content a user actually sees. It's a combination of affinity, weight, and decay. So I'll briefly touch on these, but if you do a quick Google search, you can find out a little bit more. But affinity is the connection between you and a person. So if you're on or an element or a piece of content on Facebook, so if you're a fan of the New England Patriots and you're constantly looking at their photos, Facebook believes you have a high affinity with that page. So you're more likely to see their content. If you have liked the page and you never interact with their content, Facebook's going to say you have a low affinity with their page. It's similar to your own personal accounts. So if you have a child on Facebook and you're constantly creeping through their photos and they're always showing up in your newsfeed, it's because Facebook believes you have a high affinity because you're always looking at their content. Or an ex-girlfriend, you're always looking at her photos. They keep showing up because you keep looking at her photos. Facebook bases it off of this algorithm where if you interact with something enough, they're going to boost the amount of times you're seeing it, and they multiply that by weight. So there's weight allocated to each type of interaction. So if I like a photo, I get 5 points. If I comment on a photo, I get 25 points. If I share a photo, I get 50 points. So it multiplies that by the amount of times I'm engaging with that content. And then finally, decay. That's just the amount of time since that post went out there. So if a post was shared in 2009, it's not going to show up in your newsfeed. But if a post was shared this morning, it's more likely to do so. So
is that why sometimes I go on Facebook and I'm like, why am I seeing this post from like 3 days ago?
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
The person I interact with regularly. Showing me if I haven't logged on Facebook in 3 days,
right,
and see their post.
Because you have that affinity with them.
Okay.
Yeah. That's exactly it. So now we're going to dive into Twitter. So my first recommendation when it comes to Twitter is to always start by listening. A lot of people jump into Twitter and they don't really know how to use it. When you're using Twitter, you want to start by listening. At least build an account so you can gather intelligence. See what your competitors are saying. See what people in your industry are saying. And then from there, you want to engage. Engaging is really the greatest part of Twitter. This is where you really start to see the results. It's where you really start to see that return on your investment, because you're building that relationship with people. But before you just jump in and start engaging, you want to plan. You want to plan, what type of brand story do I want to come across on Twitter? Do I want to share links to my own website? Do I want to share links to other people's websites? Think about what type of content you want to share over the course of the year. Think about, do you want to inject a little bit of personality into your tweets? What do you want actually to come out of those tweets that you're sending? And constantly be relevant. Think about your target audience and think about what content you can put out there that they actually care about. What content will they want to retweet? What type of content would they be like, okay, that's something I can respond to? One easy way to always be relevant on Twitter is to talk about kittens, bacon, and hipsters. Everybody talks about those three things. But you always want to be relevant. You want to constantly push out content that people are interested in and that your audience will want to interact with. But you want to think different. This is a company out of Washington, D.C., and every day around lunchtime, they send out a tweet. They send out a tweet and they say where they're going to be at 12:30. So they say, at 12:30, you can find us on the corner of Yonge and Dundas, whatever. They send out this tweet, And in the matter of minutes, tons of people who follow them on Twitter rush down to this corner and they sit there waiting for that truck to show up just from them sending out a tweet. They think differently. Focus on your story. MailChimp does a great job when it comes to sharing that content about their brand. They say Freddie the Chimp was even busier than Cupid this Valentine's Day, helping set a new one-day delivery record of 206 million emails. So not only are they talking about their value proposition, but they're also being a little liked and funny and telling that story about Freddie. Then as a result, people start to tweet about you. If you're visible, this is a customer. The MailChimp guys do a lot right. Their new user experience newsletter is great. Check out the first one. So people are constantly talking about your brand. But first, you have to have that presence. You have to have that story. One thing you also want to do when it comes to Twitter is you want to embrace visuals. So you want to share content that is visually appealing. We talked about that earlier, about the power of visuals when it comes to Twitter. Twitter has their own native app where you upload the photos directly into that channel and you're able to share that content through there. Once you do that, the images, instead of you having to click a link and then go to another page, they show up directly on Twitter. So from a business perspective, if you work in an industry where you share, where you sell a physical product, whether it's a food or it's an actual service, if you can take a photo of that or take photos of your staff or of your office, share that on Facebook. It shows people an inside look at your business, your experience, and what you have to offer. But the key is to remember you need to have that goal. Think about what it is that you're using Twitter for. A lot of people jump on Twitter and they get overwhelmed because of how many tweets are coming out, because of how much content is being shared. You don't want to be overwhelmed. The way to prevent that is to have a goal. And one easy way to prevent that is Hootsuite. If you haven't heard of Hootsuite.com, it is a channel that will change the game for you. It's my personal favorite. It's also a Canadian company. Strongly recommend it. Since I started this presentation, I've already sent out 2 tweets. I didn't touch my phone, but I sent out 2 tweets. The way I did that was through this thing called Hootsuite. You're able to schedule your tweets to go in advance. So while you're managing your business, while you're doing your business, and you're doing the things that actually are going to drive real results immediately, if you're out pitching or you're closing a deal, whatever that may be, you can have content being sent out on a regular basis. This is great for a one-man shop or somebody who has a small business, because you can schedule this content in an hour to go for the rest of the week. So definitely check out Hootsuite. It also allows you to track and monitor how many people are clicking on links. So if you send out a link, you can actually see how many people are clicking that link. You're also able to develop these things called columns. And the great thing about columns is you can follow 10,000 people, but only see the tweets from 50. So I can add as many people I want to this one column. I develop a column, and I say, I want these 50 people. These are 50 people who I'm actually interested in. These are 50 people who I see as potential clients. I'm going to add them to this list, and I'm going to focus on their tweets. So I'm going to only interact with them. You can target people based off of that information and knowing how to use Hootsuite and solely focus on them. Yes.
Is there the ability to use like the ad manager, Facebook ad manager, through Hootsuite?
Good question. I don't know if you can use the ad manager. You can look at Insights. I don't know if you can manage the ads through Hootsuite, though.
I'll just have to.
Yeah, check. For sure.
Can you get that? I thought Hootsuite they did. Maybe I'll use it probably, but I'll just put the one post together with the LinkedIn.
Right, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook.
That ability to target through Facebook.
You're not. Right. You can. I would recommend that you don't use Hootsuite for Facebook. The reason why I recommend that is that EdgeRank channel that I was talking about, that equation, what they also include is this thing called third-party apps. So if you use a third-party app to publish to a Facebook page, Facebook's going to show that post to less than 20%. The share button won't even show up underneath a status update from a third-party piece of content. So I would recommend that when it comes to Facebook, you are still able to schedule content directly through Facebook. That same way that you did the location thing, right beside that there's this little clock. If you click that, you can schedule your content on Facebook. I'd recommend not using Hootsuite for Facebook, but definitely using it for Twitter. It does. So it makes money because if you are a guy like me with a bunch of Twitter accounts, you have to pay to have more than 3. So you have to pay for an enterprise account. If you run a corporation and you have a bunch of people, you want all of them to be connected to the same account, you have to pay for that. If you want...
Pay Hootsuite?
Yeah, you pay Hootsuite to...
Those 10,000 things that I don't follow.
You do. You pay for that, and you pay for the management. You also get perks like a detailed analytics, so it shows you a bit more analytics around your post, so you can really geek out if you wanted to. I find it is. I find it's good for sure.
Pay for it. It's minimal amount of money. It's no
brainer. Yeah, it's like $5, something like that. So it's not crazy money. But when you go scale and you're selling $5 to millions of people, you're good. They're saying that Hootsuite might be the next Canadian billion-dollar company. 5 minutes?
Awesome. $5
at a time. So one of the other great things about Hootsuite is the ability to go mobile. This one has kept me in a relationship and not divorced because you're able to go on and you can schedule your content directly from your phone. So if you're at a restaurant, you forgot that you didn't send it a tweet, pull out your mobile phone, schedule that content, and it can go it that way. I strongly recommend downloading the application as well.
Hey, Ross,
yes?
I'm going to mention SimpleCast, which is a local company.
Yeah, that's true. Does it do the same?
Twitter feed has got lots of channels.
Cool.
And schedule your tweets and integrate with email.
I didn't know that.
It's got multiple social media.
That's right. Very cool.
So local company, Birdside, SimpleCast.
Huh. Okay. Cool. So how do you do it? You have all this content. It's all shared out there. How do you differentiate yourself, and how do you actually manage all of this? Because it's a lot. We talked about content. We talked about Facebook. We talked about Twitter. How do you do it all? First thing, I'd recommend recycle, reduce, reuse. So reuse the content that you're creating on your blog and share it on Facebook. Share it on Twitter. Instead of trying to recreate the wheel on all of these different channels, share similar content. Also keep in mind that if you send out a tweet in the morning, the people who are on Twitter at night are probably not the same people. So you can send out a tweet twice in a day. You can send out the same content. You don't have to constantly be looking for something new all the time. Schedule your content. That's a huge one for me. I strongly recommend scheduling it. Make sure you do have a mobile device, so if something does blow up while you're away from your computer, you can be quick to react. Start small and plan. You need to plan. Think about that goal. What is it that you're trying to accomplish? Focus on that. Make sure that everything you do stems back to that goal. But at the end of the day, don't stress. When it comes to social media, it's still business 101. If you focus on the core principles of business, when that comes to amazing customer service, having a remarkable product at excellent value, you'll win. You'll succeed. It's not that big of a deal when it comes down to it. If you're able to focus on your customer, putting them first, and actually caring, you'll start to see the return on your investment. You'll start to see people talking about you when you're not there. You'll start to build those relationships with customers. You'll start to see an increase in your traffic. And ultimately, you'll start to see the money. But if I could say one thing, it's don't be this guy. Don't be the guy who's on Facebook constantly saying bye, 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 bye. Think about social media as a networking event. If you walked into a networking event and I came running up to you and I say, hi, my name is Ross Simmons. Would you like to buy some social media strategy from me? I can blog, I can tweet, I can do SEO, I can do whatever you need. You'd think I was crazy. If I came up to you and I said, hi, my name is Ross. It's crazy weather we're having. Can't wait till summer. Had that conversation, had a social conversation, you would think I was normal. You would think that I was interesting. We'd have a conversation and we'd probably build a relationship. That's how social media works. Don't run in screaming bye, 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 bye. There's a movie, Glenn Gary, Glenn Ross, and there's this concept of ABC. A, always, B, D, C, closing. When it comes to social media, it's ABC, always, B, connecting. And if you can do that, you'll be able to go to Shrek to Hulk. You'll be able to get in shape. You'll be able to see those results. And I promise you, you'll be able to see the money. Thank you guys for listening. If you have any questions, let me know. You do. So you have complete customization over whether or not you accept comments or not. I recommend that you use comments. Comments are great. It allows you to kind of go down that cycle of building conversation, followed by community, which leads to expertise. when you have comments that are negative, my favorite thing to do is to show the person why they're wrong, or to respond back to it. Not to attack them, but to provide a little bit of insight around their questions, their hesitations, and have that open dialogue with them. If somebody's second-guessing your ideas, feel free to have that conversation. You might learn something from them. So I believe in having that open dialogue for sure.
You're scheduling content on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
How many messages, like you plan for a week, I think is what you're saying?
Yeah.
How many messages are you scheduling? How often are the scheduled tweets go out?
Yeah.
And what's the breakdown in terms of content versus opinion versus question?
Right.
Comment.
For sure. So I like to promote others more than I promote myself as much as possible. That's kind of the benchmark from a personal branding perspective. So from the Ross Simmons account, that's what I would do. From a business account, you want to promote your own story. You want to tell that story that's related to you. So you want to share your own content. I'd recommend at the minimum 2 tweets a day. At the minimum. If you can do more than that, great. You're better than most people. So at the minimum, try to send out 2 tweets a day. When it comes to the best times of the day to send out a tweet, in the morning, people are waking up. You saw the stat about people on their Facebook page as soon as they wake up. Same works with Twitter. There's a huge spike in the amount of volume to Twitter in the morning. Then people get to work. They actually start doing things. And then they start tweeting again towards the end of the workday because they stop doing stuff. So those are the 2 times where I would try to send out my content the most.
Your question?
It was about timing.
Okay.
Okay.
Any question?
Ross, just to make an emphasis about just in relation to advertising. I think a lot of it was kind of like you just kind of.
Right.
But there. All of this is relevant as well.
It is, especially I think when it comes to the content piece, that first part we talked about when it comes to the webinars, ebooks, blogging, that is huge for B2B. It allows you to be a leader. It allows you to kind of differentiate yourself. If you can show people that you know what you're talking about and that you know this industry better than anybody else, you can differentiate yourself from everyone else. So I think that if you can be a leader in content and the ideas that you're putting out there, from a B2B perspective, it doesn't get much better than that. You're allowed to differentiate yourself and you build not only your brand as an individual, but also as an organization on an enterprise level. When it comes to Twitter and things like that, if you're going after B2B and you want to use it for that one-on-one sales, it's unparalleled to think about who you can get in touch with. You simply find someone on Twitter, do a quick Google search, find them, follow them, and then build that relationship. You can start sending tweets, and it's okay to send out tweets about football and also about business. For me, I built up several business relationships because people were hating on me because I like the Eagles, but people will send me a tweet, and they're like, oh my God, you like the Eagles, blah, blah, blah. But because of that, I'm building a real relationship with these business professionals. I've gotten a few deals because people started a conversation talking about football. Next thing we know, we're talking about marketing. So it's definitely an opportunity when it comes to B2B as well, building those relationships. Another easy way and a simple trick, if you find people, if you're in B2B and you're looking for media, find out who the editors are on some of those media channels. Find out who the editors are. Follow them. Typically, they only have about 800 to 1,000 followers. So they don't have these huge followings. You follow them, you start retweeting their content, building a relationship with them. As soon as you send them a few tweets back and forth and you start to see they're retweeting your content, it's so easy to send them a note and say, hey, my company's just launching this new feature. Would you mind having a chat? See if they're interested with it. It's an easy, simple way to kind of build relationships and then from there kind of generate some media from it.
What do you think of Facebook as a B2B?
It's tough. That's a great question because it is tough. I've seen a few businesses do it very well. I've seen a lot of businesses struggle with it. I think it's a great channel for if you're creating content. If you're simply doing status updates and you're simply trying to get likes and you don't have webinars running or books or blog posts and you have nowhere to really drive people to, I don't know what you would use it for outside of ads. Outside of advertising, I don't know why you would use it from a B2B perspective unless you have content that you're constantly sharing. Because content shared on Facebook has a chance to get shared quicker than any other channel because there's more people. And people in business tend to eventually add people they do business with to Facebook. So you can create your content, share it on your status update, and then other people will start to share it, and they can build the amount of traffic to your site. So I think Facebook's true value is as a content sharing platform and as an advertising platform when it comes to B2B. HubSpot's a great example. They use Facebook, they share webinars, they share blog posts, and the content gets shared because they're providing rich quality content. They're an excellent example.
So we're at time. Let's give Ross a round of applause. Thank you very much. If any other questions, just kind of come up and talk to Ross. If you could fill out the evaluation forms that were on your chair, that would be appreciated. And you can leave them on the chair or give them to Jennifer on the way out. And thank you again for coming. And I've got a little thank you for Ross.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay, so enjoy your day.
Thanks, guys.